All right, Giants and Cardinals open up a series at Oracle Park. And, boy, the traditional St. Louis Cardinals, I love the uniform. Giants have different uniforms as well. The City Connect uniforms were unveiled today. Bruce Jenkins, good morning to you. Happy weekend. And Cardinals are in town. How about that?
Yeah, you know, always an interesting matchup there. You know, it goes way, way back with Brooklyn and St. Louis, and it's an interesting Cardinals team. A little bit disappointing, you know, but they've got the good core. They got Yadier Molina, Goldschmidt, and Arenado are fantastic. You know, a lot of new faces. You know, they got Tyler O'Neill out there and Dylan Carlson. I see Harrison Bader played yesterday. He'd been out for a long time. He's one of those hair on fire guys that you love to watch in center field. He hit a two-run homer yesterday, so that had to give him a good feeling. And they've got a kid. Well, he's not a kid anymore, but Alex Reyes made the All-Star team reliever, which is a great thing for him. I remember seeing him in the Futures game in 2015. It's like, oh, my God, who was that? He had a bunch of injuries, but he's finally back. He's allowed 20 hits in 40 innings, Martin. He's got a Bob Gibson ERA at 1.12.
Yeah, he's been terrific, and you're right. The injuries were just devastating for him. And they still think he could be a starter someday. They're just bringing him back slowly, and he is an all-star. 20 for 20 in saves for him.
Yeah, but not bad.
But, yeah, come on.
But it's odd to see them in fourth place, but there's a long way to go.
Well, I'm not so sure where they're going, to tell you the truth. You know, their last 10 losses on the road. Now, they've won a couple of games, and they scored more than two runs, but their last 10 losses on the road, two runs or less, and they're 18-26 on the road. They're 10 back. If you look at the second wild card, they're 8.5 back. And this is a team that's in trouble, and I'll give you the ultimate stat. They're BABIP. Their BABIP is 268.
Excuse me. Yeah, well, nobody's hitting over 280 on the club, which is just for strict batting average, which is unusual for them. Yeah. And you know, the pitching isn't nearly, the rotation isn't nearly as impressive as what we're used to. I think that's been a big factor in it. But you know, as they say, Marty, when these two teams get together, all hell could break loose.
Throw out the record books.
That's right.
You know, they've had great announcers. Jack Buck was there. I love listening to him. Harry Carey was part of it. John Rooney is there now. Mike Shannon. Look, St. Louis is a great baseball town. It's the sea of red, really.
Yeah, Jack Buck once said he had his problems with Harry Carey at the beginning when they were paired together because I think Harry was a little bit jealous. He's probably half in the bag anyway. But Jack Buck said when Harry and I were in the booth and going good, there was never a better team in the history of the game. And he, you know, Jack Buck wasn't a big boastful, arrogant guy, but he really believed that, and I quite plausible to me. I mean, I would love to have been a kid growing up in the Midwest and listening to Jack Buck every day. I'll tell you that.
Oh, absolutely. And then, boy, they go back to Gabby Street.
Yeah.
You know, that's a name. Dizzy Dean, a Cardinal announcer as well. So they've had wonderful, wonderful broadcasters. And it's a great baseball town. But, boy, Bruce, they're not scoring runs right now. And the loss of Jack Flaherty for them was really, really devastating. And Dakota Hudson, believe it or not, Miles Mikolas is out. The original Ponce de Leon is out, too, apparently.
Boy, what a career he's had. It goes back centuries.
1607, I think, the fountain of something.
He said amazing, amazing endurance for that man.
Really? He said he found the fountain of youth and apparently still pitching. But Jordan Hicks, who throws 100. But the one guy that's still hanging around, and I wonder how baseball is going to look at him when the career is over, and that's Adam Wainwright. What do you think?
No, look at him very fondly. I mean, he's had big moments in the postseason, one of the great curveballs, and a really good man, good character guy. Oh, stepped up for the Cardinals just time after time after time when they needed him. I'm not sure he's a Hall of Famer, but he'll make the Cardinals Hall of Fame, I'm sure. Really a good one.
Yeah, Giants will see him tomorrow. He's 40 years old, and you're right, out of the bullpen. Remember in the World Series, out of the bullpen?
Yeah.
I forget who it was. He shut down. Maybe the
Tremendous.
Tigers. Yeah, he was fabulous. Well, the big Giant Express keeps rolling on, and, you know, they lead the league in pinch hitters. They're almost three pinch hitters a game, but that's the platoon. It's Renicki and Lowenstein. It's Hank Bauer and Gene Woodling. He does his platoon, and Bruce, they got the best record in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, and going against a lefty today, we're going to see a lot of right-handed hitters, and they need to improve what's going on there. But it was good to see Ruff have a big night last night, because he was coming up empty a little too often for their liking. But he hit two rockets. One of them went out of the park. And it's one of the good things about this team, the way they're built, and it's really helped them withstand a lot of the injuries that they've had, is that they've got guys to step in just time after time, and they keep coming through. So, and then you've got with a right-handed hitting lineup. Then later on, you've got a bunch of left-hand hitters coming off the bench if you need it. So, it's been really interesting. Kapler's plan is working, and it's one of the great things. They still need to hit better with guys on base, but last night in particular, DeSclafani was so good. They just needed a couple of key hits, and they got them. And just a quick note on that: good for Kapler letting him go out for the ninth. So that was terrific. I actually wish he'd let him finish the game. We're listening to Kruko, and he goes, "You're talking about finishing a game, complete games." He goes, to get that 27th out, there's no feeling like it. It's the greatest feeling in the world. And you can't imagine what it does to a guy's confidence. And I wish they'd let him take another shot at that 27th out. But these days, if you let a guy go 8 2/3, it's unbelievable.
Well, it was. Anytime you get a save situation, they always try to give somebody a save. But I'm all with you listening to the game. I said, 8 2/3. Come on, you got a 5-2 lead.
Yeah.
And, it's not like you're bringing John Blanchard up off the bench. Or
Jerry Lynch.
Jerry Lynch. Hey, we got Jerry Lynch in the show today. We got him in the show today. Very good, Bruce.
Very good,
Dave Philly. I agree with you. But he's an all-star, and Gausman is not going to be an all-star, obviously, because he's going to pitch Sunday. DeGrom is out as well. And I would think Walker Buehler and DeSclafani, I would think you'd add those two.
No, absolutely. Walker Buehler – he's a lot more of a marquee name. He's been nothing but great since he came up. And DeSclafani's kind of resurrecting his career. So I think Buehler would probably be the first guy they look at. But absolutely. And DeSclafani said he didn't really have anything going last night. He didn't have good stuff at all.
I think that's getting old. He said that in his last start, too, that he just mauled everybody, too.
I'll tell you that.
I think we're going to stop asking him that question. As Bill Parcell said, your record speaks for itself. He's been terrific. He really has been terrific. Bill, 27 outs. Were you surprised they pulled him at that last out?
After Bill? 8 innings, because they had Bremer up, and they were talking about him going 8 innings. He still had 90 pitches. When he went back out there, I was like, okay, finish this thing, because that's what you're out there for. And when you look at Herman Marquis, he's the only one that's got 3 complete games. He's an all-star. So I was thinking maybe Kapler's trying to push him to equal Marquis with 3 saves. But, I'm right with you guys. He should have just got one more hit or tried one more. During the game, you saw Kapler go out and talk to him. I'm loving that he's talking to his starters. He's not just pulling them before he talks to them. He's changed a little bit on that point. But my question to you today, both you guys, last night the Giants played their only night game. They were the only team to play a night game, even though 6:15 was a start. Today, they're the first game up, and they had to travel. Does the Players Association approve the schedule, Bruce? Do you know that, if they have anything to do with it?
Yeah, I'm really not on the inside of that. I'm not sure how that works, but I'm a little bit in the dark there. But it's good they're playing. It's not really a day game today. I don't know how it works, is my answer, Marty.
I think there's something about going time zones, and then if you have a night game, which is, I guess last night was a 6:10 start, night game. And this is it a day game at 3:05? I don't know. But there are rules, in this last agreement that said you can't have these crazy trips, play a game in New York on Sunday night and a day game in San Francisco on Monday. So I would think there probably is something in there, Bill.
Yeah, it doesn't come up very often as it used to, where really egregious, violations of just, decency.
Yeah, I don't think so on that one. Hey, Bruce, we did want to touch on Larry Doby today and not overlook him at all. July 5th, 1947, he integrates the American League. We had Bob Kendrick on Saturday night from the Negro League Baseball Museum to tell the story. But you and I have done this show for so many years together, and each year we recognize Larry Doby and his contribution to American society, baseball, and what a tough time he had as just as a young 22-year-old breaking into baseball.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he wasn't the first, but in the meantime, in 1947, he gets brought up around the All-Star break just a few weeks after Jackie Robinson breaks in, a few months. And he's the only black guy in the American League. Come on. I mean, there were no interleague games. It's not like he and Jackie can get together before an interleague game and talk about what's going on. He's the only black guy in the American League, went through the same kind of thing that Jackie Robinson did and overcame it the same way. As he said, I just fought back all the stuff that came at me by playing as hard as I could and being one of the best players in the league, which he absolutely was. I mean, he was an all-star every year for like 6 years running. He led the league in just about anything you could name, including homers and RBIs along the way. He was almost the MVP. Yogi Berra won the 1954 MVP, but Doby was second. He started, you know, they got to the Cleveland got to the series in 48. He became the first black player to hit a homer in the World Series, off Johnny Sain, no less. So he had a wonderful, wonderful career. He played in the Negro Leagues. He was with the Newark Eagles. He's a New Jersey guy playing for the Newark Eagles, and one year they knocked off the legendary Kansas City Monarchs with Satchel Paige to win that Negro Leagues title. So really a very nice career. I think he really wanted to top it off by being a manager, and it was tough all the way into the 70s. You know, he hadn't seen one. Finally, Frank Robinson breaks through in 77. Was it 75 with Cleveland? But Larry Doby was the second black manager in Major League history with the White Sox. They fired Bob Lemon and he took over and it just didn't work out. They went like 37-50 and he never got another chance. And I think that really bothered him.
Yeah, Bill, are you familiar with Larry Doby?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I grew up in Ohio, so he was a Cleveland Indian, and that was one of the things, you know, you used to follow the Indians and the Tigers and the Reds. That's kind of what I followed at. And, you know, I remember him being an All-Star. It seemed like he was in an All-Star game every year, and I was just looking up, 7-time All-Star. That was one of the major things I remember about Larry Doby. And some of the things that Bruce has said, you can't put exclamation points around that because he just had a fabulous career. Of course, his numbers retired also. And, you know, that was that kind of guy that everybody kind of knew, but he wasn't that big name that everybody wanted to be that superstar.
Well, and he was on a really good team. The Cleveland team had a bunch of great and amazing pitching staff, which is really kind of the ongoing story of those Indians teams, that early win and Bob Feller and those guys, Bob Lemon, Garcia. But he was an absolute mainstay. And as you said, you know, he was a fixture in the All-Star game, which is very, very cool. He really made a tremendous career, you know, for himself against heavy odds back then, serious odds.
Well, and he's such a young man, and when they introduced him into the clubhouse, you know, they signed him on July 3rd. Now it's July 5th. They get him in the game, and he strikes out, and they basically don't use him much the rest of the year. But in the clubhouse, when they brought him in, people just turned away. They didn't even shake his hand. And now we're not talking about Jackie Robinson, who's, you know, made issues on the bus while he was in the Army, a UCLA star, and all the fabric that Jackie had to deal with all this stuff. Larry Doby didn't have that. And still to overcome it is amazing. Amazing. And, Bruce, you bring up a good point, and that is in the early 50s. The Indians chased the Yankees every year. Every year with that pitch. They just couldn't beat them. Mm-hmm. And even though that Al Lopez was the manager who finally did beat him in 54, they couldn't beat the Yankees. Now, to Bill's point, if Cleveland would have won all those pennants, we'd be talking about Larry Doby like Mickey Mantle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he sure did his share, though. And it's funny how the teammates started liking him after he got him to the World Series. After starting hitting home runs for him. Hey, this is not a bad guy after all.
No, 318 in the World Series. And, of course, Satchel Paige was in there, too. So good. I'm glad we could recognize him every year. for what he accomplished. And he was the second African-American manager for the White Sox in 1978. So Larry Doby, a very, very, very special man in America and baseball history as well. Bill, you're going to like this one. July 5th, God, I remember this. It was like shocking to me. 1987, the Giants trade for Kevin Mitchell. How about that big trade? 1987, Bruce.
That has to be one of the greatest trades in the history of the team, because they got Dravecki also. They gave up Chris Brown, Keith Comstock, Mark Davis, and Mark Grant. Now, there's some talent in there, but when you get a badass like Kevin Mitchell in return, forget about it. They already got Will Clark and Robbie Thompson and Jeffrey Leonard and Chili Davis, and then they get to the. To what turned out to be one of the all-time heartbreaking postseason series losses in seven games to the Cardinals. People still talk about what could have happened there. But, you know, when they got Kevin Mitchell, and he played 69 games, I think, for that team, and was, you know, 15 homers. It was immediate impact. And it's just any time you got Will Clark hitting and Kevin Mitchell on deck, man, don't leave your seat.
Hey, Bruce, don't forget they got Craig Lefferts in that trade also, the lefty, and he was fabulous out of the bullpen for the Giants from the left side.
That's right. Isn't he the guy who sprinted out of the bullpen he was running away from a fire?
That's the one thing he was known for. That was it.
Yeah, he was exhausted by the time he got there. No, he did do some good stuff.
It was like, remember Heath Bell? Remember he came in and he slid into the mound once. Was that in the All-Star game? They brought him in. But, Bill, Mark Davis is a dear friend of yours. What did you think when this trade went down?
Well, it was good for Mark Davis because he did not pitch consistently in the orange and black. And what does he do? He goes over to the Padres, becomes their closer, becomes a Cy Young winner, when you remember that. So, you know, equal sides got talent. And they got real good talent. Mark Grant, of course, is in the booth with the Padres, and he's been doing fantastic. So I think both sides got a good nucleus of players that maybe Marty and Bruce needed to change uniforms, but they did. They resurrected some of these careers. And, boy, Kevin Mitchell in the middle of that lineup, that was ferocious.
How about Al Rosen pulling the trigger, Bruce? How about that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And San Diego was Mitchell's hometown, but he needed to get out of there because he'd had a really tough upbringing there. He knew a lot of people that maybe it wasn't that great that he knew or hung out with, and he said, it was so great for me just to get out of that climate and come up to the Bay Area and kind of start fresh with a really good team and put some of the troubles behind him. He never really shook him as the years went on, but Kevin Mitchell at his best was a very, very dangerous hitter and a good, real good teammate.
Well, he's a great Giant when you look at it. MVP, right? 1989, am I right?
Yeah.
And they go to the World Series. And, you know, he had one of the great at-bats in the history of the World Series, you guys, in 86. It was one of many, but, you know, it's Game 6, the Red Sox and the Mets, and the Mets are down to their final out in the bottom of the 10th, and they're down by two, and it's over. The Red Sox have broken the curse. Let's just get it over with. But Gary Carter singles, and then Kevin Mitchell's the next guy, where if you're out, it's over. And he singles to center and does some heads-up base running to help him score the tying run. I mean, that's just so clutch, you can't believe it.
You know, you and I are starting to think alike, Bruce. It's starting to worry me here. As you started doing that, I said, let me pull up the trade from the Mets, because how did he even get to San Diego after that World Series? And so December 11th, 1986, this is right after the World Series, he's traded by the Mets with Kevin Armstrong, Kevin Brown, it can't be the pitcher, another one, Sean Abner, who I think was the number one pick, and Stan Jefferson to the Padres for Adam Ging, Kevin McReynolds, and Gene Walter.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and then he only stayed with the Padres until July, and then it's a trade we talked about. So he got moved around, but, boy, he was a hit. He, as Marty Lurie likes to say, he could hit.
I love Marty Lure. Have you seen him lately?
No one's seen him lately. He's been in disguise.
I haven't even seen him. I don't look in the mirror anymore. You look in the mirror and you say, who's that guy? You
know? Yeah, well, as soon as you said Dave Philly, and I said it right after you, I knew we were on the same wavelength, Marty.
It's getting scary. It actually is getting scary. All right, 2002, this is a good one. Of course, not a good one for Ted Williams because he did pass away. But there's so much controversy at the end with Ted Williams. Remember? With his son and the autographs and then the Cairo stuff, you know, freezing him and all that. So today was the day he passed away, the great Ted Williams.
Yeah, well, anytime your body is frozen in one place and your head's in another, you have to feel that. And how often does it happen? You know, first the body, then the head. You can visit the head separately if you want. You know, get in line. It costs you $15. Good God.
Yeah. Why did
I guess the original thought was, you know, we'll freeze him, and in 100 years, the science will be able to bring people back, and Ted will come back, and he'll hit 406 again, you know?
I guess.
Or at the very least, he'll have some opinions, but then they cut off the head. I have no idea what goes on there.
I think it's here in Arizona somewhere. So,
on a given night, he's a little chatty. He might have a few interesting words.
My goodness, the great Ted Williams! Boy, what a way to end it. You know, I like 1960 a lot better when he hit a home run in his last at bat against Jack Fisher. I like that better.
One
last one, and this is a great pitcher, and I'm glad that we can remember him, Robin Roberts.
In
1953, Bruce, his 28th consecutive complete game. How about that?
28 complete. I mean, you can't even imagine that today. Like the last full season we had 2 years ago, the leader had three. Actually, the whole big leagues leader had three. That's how far we've come, and that's why DeSclafani didn't finish his game. But, Robin Roberts, you know, the way people talk about him is a little early for me, but at least in his prime. But, you know, he was a guy who had as good a fastball as anybody, but he used it when he needed it. You know, he was relaxed out there. He was a finesse guy. He worked quickly. The next thing you know, 2 hours later, you're in the ninth inning, and it's scoreless or 1-1, and he's got the complete game going. And, if you talk about the history of the Phillies, I mean, when he helped them get to the World Series in 1950, they hadn't been there since 1915. That's a pretty good run of, and they were like really bad most of the time, and they got to the last day of the season in 1950. They're playing the Dodgers, the Brooklyn Dodgers, and if the Dodgers win, it's going to be a 3-game playoff. So it's Roberts and Don Newcomb, classic matchup. They're both going for their 20th win. It's 1-1 in the 10th, and Robin Roberts, of course, is still in the game in the 10th, leads off with a hit. And it sets up a rally that set up probably the greatest home run in Phillies history by Dick Sisler, a 3-run homer that gets them into the World Series. So he was an amazing guy. And one other thing about the World Series, they got routed by the Yankees, as so many other teams did in the 50s. But Robin Roberts started the second game against Allie Reynolds, and it's 1-1 in the 10th. Of course, Robin Roberts is still out there. But the first hitter is Joe DiMaggio. He's popped up four times against Roberts, and now this is the fifth time, and he hits it out, and that's the difference. But everybody met their fate eventually with the Yankees. But, I mean, Robin Roberts, what an amazing man.
Boy, great story, Bruce, great story. And, of course, he ended up being released by the Phillies, and he ended up going to the – he was 1-10, and then he went to the Orioles and resurrected his career and eventually ended up with Houston, the Colt 45s or the Astros, and that was it. But they always say – Richie Ashburn said that when he saw Tom Seaver for the first time, he called Robin Roberts up and said, Robin, I'm looking at you on the mound. So for people who don't know Robin Roberts, just think of Tom Seaver. That was Robin Roberts.
Yeah, and the guys on the team said, you know, it's like you couldn't pitch him often enough. I mean, he pitched like three times in 5 days down the stretch. He started three games out of five. That start that he made to save the season in 1950 was his third start in 5 days. But they said, the more you put him out there, the better he gets. You can't wear him out.
That was the game where Cal Abrams was thrown out at the plate by Richie Ashburn, who had no arm at all.
Right.
Duke Snider, and they sent him. Milt Stock sent him. And he was
We're getting deep now, Bill.
Yeah. You guys lost me right there. I'm just listening now.
It's a great game.
I have
nothing to say about
too.
That.
I love that. I love yeah, Milt Stock, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, yeah, I think he was the third base coach, but whatever. All right. Well, thanks for being on all weekend. It's great to do this, and it's Giants-Cardinals today, and the uniforms, as I said, I love that Cardinal uniform. When I was in Brooklyn, went to Ebbets Field, I saw the Cardinals a bunch of times, and I would look at that uniform with the birds on the bat, and I'll tell you, it was gorgeous. I really like that uniform.
So tell me true now. You're at Ebbets Field, and just say that the New York Giants are coming into Ebbets Field for a big game, and they're wearing the uniforms that the Giants are going to be busting out now. They'd be hooted off the field. They'd be hooted off
would
the
be,
field.
It would be a parade. It would be like someone going to a Mardi Gras parade instead of a baseball game. Yeah, boy, we haven't even touched on that. Yeah, those uniforms. Mm. Well, look, this is what baseball wants, because they could sell the uniforms and sell all the gear, and it's all money. But, you have to imagine fog when you apparently you have to imagine fog when you look at the uniform, I guess.
Yeah, and let's face it, anytime I'm watching any baseball team, I want a little bit of fog in my visual. You got it. Without fog, it's really nothing. So,
well, at our stage of talking baseball, we're always in a fog, so it doesn't
matter. They're not the Giants, I'll tell you. Whoever's wearing those uniforms and you're looking at the TV, it's not the Giants, so that's where we start. Not the Giants. Okay, yeah. Here we go.
All right, Bruce, I love it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bruce.
Thanks, guys.
Talk next week.
All
right. Okay. Three guys talking ball.
Yeah, those uniforms, Marty, all I can say is Nike. That's what Nike has done. Nike's changing a lot of looks of baseball.
Right?
Yeah, I think that's what's happening.
All right, we'll take a break. Paul White will join us next. We're going to look at the big picture of baseball and all these division races and some of the major surprises and disappointments as we wrap up this July 4th weekend. More coming up right after this on the Sports Leader.